Genesis 25, reread 19 through 28. Harry.
And these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, "Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob.
Okay. We only got to the struggle within the womb in verse 22. As I remember it, metaphorically, it's the struggle going on within us. It's the struggle of the two natures. And we talked about how that, because we know that Christ has completed the way, then we can rejoice in the struggle, because you're guaranteed that that's the outcome if you abide. Now, in verse 23, "And the Lord said unto her, The two nations are in thy womb." The word nations, I don't want to go into that, never mind. In the naturalist, the prophecy concerned the struggle between Edom and Israel. Edom was the nation that Esau founded, and I told you about the descendants of Edom. They always and forever persecuted Israel. Still are. Edom is a type, metaphorically, of the Gentile in the natural. The struggle has been total, and it still is. The Herod, the guy that crucified Christ or that caused his crucifixion, was a Edomite, descendant of Esau. Hadrian, the evil, most evil of all of the Romans, was an Edomite. And you're an Edomite. The Edomites were always massive idolaters. They had as many gods as there was rocks and trees. Whatever they saw in every generation that they desired, it became a god. And therefore they worshipped that god. You remember the word worship just means to give importance to or give breath to. And just like you and I, you know, everything that comes along, we worship. Well, that's all that the flesh can do is be an idolater. So don't be surprised if you're an idolater. You just see through it. I mean, everything your eyes see, if it's good, it's the same test that Eve had. Remember? She saw that it was pleasant to the eyes. She saw that it would make her wise. Wait a minute, I forgot. I better read that. I'll get it screwed up. And then it's the test that Christ overcame in the temptation of the wilderness. The woman saw that the tree was good for food, it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise. Well, everything that, from that point forward, all that the flesh can do is worship those things. That's the nature of the fall. You have to give importance to them rather than see them as utilitarian. That's why Paul said that our function in life is to use the world, but not abuse it. And the word use is like you would use a hammer to construct something, but the word abuse is to give importance to. The only way you abuse something from a spiritual standpoint is give importance to it. So the world is to be used, it belongs to you, but never, ever, ever once give it importance. And when you get that settled in your being, then you'll be free. Okay? Now, two nations are in thy womb, in verse 23, and two manner of people will be separated from thee. Now that's a strange, strange... It's like saying... It's like a leopard having a lion and a leopard. Or a rabbit having a dog and a... I mean, it's two distinct, two manner, two distinct separate things. That normally wouldn't be that condition. You understand? So even back here at this point, the struggle of Christ and you within you is going on. The elder shall serve the younger. Well, it says the one people shall be stronger than the other people. Now, who are the people that are stronger? Who is stronger in this case, Jacob or Esau? Esau is far stronger. Just as you are, because of the mind of Christ, which emptied himself of all power, you are far stronger than Christ. You understand that?
We go back for a second to the two manner of people. Are both of them different from Rebekah?
No.
Or is Jacob? Jacob is the offspring of Rebekah, and Esau is a different thing.
Right. The Talmud has all kinds of stories about that. They say somehow that when Isaac had intercourse, that the seed of Isaac went in first, and then the evil one snuck in and pumped his seed in right afterwards. And so there's two, it was like, it says like if you put two pearls in a vial, the one that went in first will come out last. And so that's the idea of Jacob was born after Esau. Esau came out first.
That's an interesting idea.
Well, it's just like we
did. But he was conceived first.
Right. And therefore, it always has to be the natural has to come first and then the spirit. That's why all attempts to make the spirit lead the natural will always fail. And that's why religion always fails. The natural has to run its course before the spirit can be revealed. Now, the elder serving the younger, there are at least 13 examples of that in the scripture. Now, that's the opposite of the law of nature. Always, in every society, even in the Jewish society, The elder, the firstborn son, is the, before the, while they were still high places, before they were in Jerusalem, the firstborn son served the role as the priest of the tribe. He got a double portion of the inheritance. He got everything, you know. So it was always the honor to be the firstborn. So again, the reason it's important is because Israel is the firstborn of God. But here we see that that Jacob is going to become Israel after the fight. But even in the natural, Israel, or Jacob, conned Esau into giving him his birthright. In fact, he downright lied, as we'll see. Which is what, that's why, you know, you're always, God sneaks up on you. Right?
That's for sure.
God, this Christ in you, he's a good con artist. And I'm sorry, that's going to be on the tape. But he always sneaks up on you. And we'll get to that in a minute. But if you're interested, these 13 examples are, first of all, Cain and Abel. No, I don't want to do that. I'll give them to you if you want them later. Well, again, for the type, Israel here, Edom is always a type of the flesh. In fact, the word Edom means red or fleshy. And Esau, that was his people, was Edom. And Israel or Jacob is always a type of the seed. There's been always attempts to make, throughout history, the family of Esau was always stronger. They were the first nation on the earth, the first people that organized into a nation. They had kings and dukes long before Israel. They resisted Israel's passage through their land when Israel came out of Egypt. David almost completely defeated them, and he made them subject to Israel for about 150 years. Then after the Babylonian captivity, the Maccabees compelled them to leave Israel or embrace Judaism. From the time of Christ, they were under the rule of Israel, the actual physical nation. Which is, if we see this process, we see always that at the beginning, if we see this as the metaphor, we see the beginning that the flesh is always the dominant, always trying to wipe out the seed. But as time goes through this Old Testament, which is the metaphor of what's happening in you, and slowly but surely, the flesh, or Edom, or Esau, will always serve your purposes. Okay? And that's just another example of why you can be at rest. You don't have to worry about what it appears at any given moment. Let's go to Psalm 60. Read the whole thing. Barbara?
O God, thou hast cast us off. Thou hast scattered us. Thou hast been displeased. O turn thyself to us again. Thou hast made the earth to tremble. Thou hast broken it. Fill the breaches thereof, for it shaketh. Thou hast showed thy people hard things. Thou hast made us to drink the wine of astonishment. Thou hast given a banner to them that fear thee, that may be displayed because of the truth, Selah. That thy beloved may be delivered, save with thy right hand, and hear me. God has spoken in his holiness. I will rejoice. I will divide Shechem, and meet out the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine, and
Manasseh
is mine. Ephraim also is the strength of my head. Judah is my lawgiver. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. Philistia, triumph thou because of me. Who will bring me into the strong city? Who will lead me into Edom? Will not thou, O God, which has cast us off, and thou, O God, which didst not go out with our armies, give us help from trouble, for vain is the help of man. Through God we shall do valiantly, for he it is that shall tread down our enemies.
Okay, so you, by the time we finish Genesis, you'll know what each of these types mean. Shechem and Sukkoth, Gilead, Ephraim, Judah, Moab, Edom, Philistia. They're all a type of what happens in the flesh. It's a spiritual type. But for Edom, over Edom will I cast out my shoe. I mean, it's like he's less than meaningful. Okay? Well, there's all kinds of other ones we could study, but you're not interested. One of the interesting things about Edom and the nation, though, have any of you heard of Petra? Not the rock group, but the nation or the site of Petra. Petra is this incredible city that that is carved into a face of a rock just south of Jerusalem. I mean, just south of Israel. And it's one of the most wondrous of all ancient archaeological finds. I mean, it's like you're in this barren waste and you come through a dry wash and you go around and there's this temple that's carved into a solid rock sandstone. And it is, I mean, you have a picture? No, it's not a picture. But it's really, it's one of the most beautiful of ancient things. But it was built by Edom. Ouch. Okay, back to Genesis. And went in verse 24, and when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. Now, again, we could spend hours talking about what this idea of twins is so incredible. Cain and Abel were allegedly twins. Jacob and Esau were allegedly twins. The major types in the scriptures were twins. When Christ was taken up into a high place by Satan, it wasn't a separate entity that took him. It was the mind, because as Son of Man, he had to take on the role of the flesh. Just as in you, from God's standpoint, when God looks at you, he sees twins. Except he doesn't see that either, because he sees only Christ, because you're at the cross. But the first has to die. And so that's exactly the same thing that happened throughout all of the scriptures, is that this pattern of twins, the firstborn has to die so the last can be revealed. And it's just over and over and over and over again throughout the scriptures. The one was red in verse 25, and the first came out red all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. The word that doesn't give it the strength of what it means. Red just means it's from the word Adam, which means like a man. And Adam is from the word which has blood. Dam is the Hebrew word for blood. So Adam is one that shows forth blood. But the word Dam is also the word for the fruit of the grape, the wine. And so it's massively connected with what we do when we take communion, and the wine is a type of Israel. But, I mean, a type of the bride. The word hairy, its real meaning is it means tempestuous or tossed around, and it's like a cork on the sea. I mean, nothing, no stability. Whether or not he was hairy or not is immaterial. But the word, it means hairy garment. Garment is just means he was large, ample, powerful. So the idea again is that the first to come out was a man. He was red. He showed forth. He was tossed. He was tempestuous. The best of them. And in 20, they called his name Esau, and Esau means, it means, interestingly enough, it means to do or to make. So again, the human race that's typified in Esau, their connection is always with regards to what am I going to do? Do. You know, you meet somebody, what do you do? You know, I've learned to hate that question. Because from the opposite, Israel's only position is what do you see? Israel, Esau to do, Jacob's going to become Israel. Israel means to see God. The only function of life is to see God. All that this vessel, this thing can do is be concerned about what it's going to do next. So even in these early scriptures in Genesis, this mystery is revealed. Now the question is whether or not any of the ancient rabbis understood it. Yes, they did. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel. I love it. The word "took hold" is a technical word which means to seize or take possession of. And the heel, we'll study that in a minute. But the word, and it says, and his name was called Jacob. The word Jacob, the rabbis don't like this one with a flip. They do not like it because the word Jacob means a supplanter, or a cheater, or a defrauder.
I'm thinking of little Jacob. Tomorrow night he's going to play the jack of something. Stealing tarts.
You know when you look your name up in those little books what your name means? Well, Jacqueline is feminine of Jacob. So I looked it up. Cheater. Mm.
Do they take it back that far?
Mm-hmm, that's what the book says.
It's a cheater?
It's a supplanter, kind of like a trickster, kind of, yeah.
The Artful Dodger. Mm-hmm.
The Great Tricker.
It's not fair.
It's interesting, just again from the mechanics of the language. In verse 25 concerning Esau, the plural is used. They called him. I mean, an idea is it's the idea of that there's bunches. In verse 26 about Jacob, the singular is used. Great mystery if you're a grammaticist.
Also, in the first one, the reference, the object of the action is the person, and in the second one, the name is the object of the
right.
Action.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Now, rabbis explain that everyone who saw him called him thus. In other words, everyone who saw Esau, I mean, this is one explanation. Everyone who's called him, calling means drawing to oneself or becoming attracted to one. And we'll see a little bit later that Esau attracted people, but Jacob did not attract attention. Jacob was almost invisible, is what this is the sense of this means in the Hebrew.
No former comings.
He took hold on Esau's heel from the very birth, the moment of birth. His supremacy was revealed. I mean, he seized it, he took hold, he took possession, and didn't look like it. Because all attention, as we're going to see in a minute, was going to be given to Esau. Esau was the creme de la creme.
Way back when we studied the original curse and the fall and all, the thing about the serpent would bruise the seed of woman's heel, and we said that meant would affect his walk.
Right.
But it sounds like this means he took control of his walk.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Now we're going to get some kind of exciting stuff here. His name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man, dwelling in tents. The word cunning doesn't mean like we think of the word. It's a bad translation. It's the Hebrew word yava, which means to know by experience. What it literally means, to know by experience, is the opposite of to know by revelation. I mean, to know by experience means to know by sensory perception. And so that all that all that Esau could know was that which he perceived by his senses. Now, that's, again, the lot of the human race. That's why when the most intelligent of the human race is confronted with revelation, they're slain. They'll either want to kill you or they'll embrace you. There's never, ever, ever a middle ground. And the reason is, it's like, because if to embrace that, to embrace the revelation is going to cost them their life. It's going to be the cross. But the revelation will totally come against that which is known by experience or that which is known by sensory perception. Okay?
We studied somebody a long time ago that was described as a cunning hunter.
Nimrod. Okay, now we're going to get, things are going to get interesting now. The word hunter is the word that means, trap or snare. And it primarily is applied not to game, but to men. So the Talmud is full of stories that Esau's primary role was trapping men or providing a snare. And then again, the New Testament talks about, you know, if you offend one of these, my little ones, it would be better for you that you were, a millstone was tied around your neck and you were cast into the depth of the Red Sea. Well, the word there, snare there, is the word which means the same thing. You're ensnared by self-realization. Because that's the antithesis of the plan of God. And it says that Jacob was a plain It's the word that means gentle or undefiled. It has a sense of meaning. The only time you can be gentle is if when you're complete within yourself. You didn't have to snare anybody and then we get this whole idea of subjective truth. You know, the truth, false faith always needs to be defended and it needs adherence. The true faith is just its own power. You don't have to snare people to trap people. You don't have to be a hunter. Well, he dwelt in tents. The rabbis say that he dwelt in the tents of Torah, and it's plural because it says remember who Eber is? Eber. Anyway, you remember who Shem is? And you remember who Noah is? Okay. It says he dwelt in the tents of Shem and Noah and Eber. In other words, to study Torah.
What's the contrast here? What's a man in the field?
We'll get to that in a minute. Verse 28, and Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison. Eat is the Hebrew word peh. And this is one of the worst translations in the Bible. Doesn't mean eat at all. It means to give breath to. No question. I mean, peh means to give breath to. Venison is the word sayid, T-S-A-Y-I-D, and it's the same kind of word that we remember we studied about jewels, were keli, and it means the end result of the process is the jewel. Well, the end result of the chase, or the snare, is the sayid. So if I were going to hunt, if I were going to be a hunter, then the end result of what I shot was the sayid, whether it was a deer or oxen or elk. But if I were going to hunt men, the end result of what I did was I'd give breath to those same idols. I'd give breath to the things of the world.
It sounds like Isaac takes after his father.
Hmm?
Isaac takes after his father. He screws up.
This is Esau.
Yeah, but Isaac loved Esau because he gave breath.
Oh yeah, Isaac, you got to remember now. Isaac's function he served his function as a revelator.
Yeah, and he's passed his seed on, so now he can do it.
Right. Okay. What it means, though, the idea is the reason that he loved him was because he gave breath to his father's idolatry. Now, it's always the case. If you can worship or give breath to the same things that your father does, then you'd be a nice kid.
It's interesting that it says to give breath to the chase, because right. That's what you were saying. Idolatry is the chase. You know, we're always chasing after something.
Right.
And it's the...
Once you get it, you don't want it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now some little stories about this little scene. Jacob, as I said, Jacob was conceived before Esau. And it's because since if two pearls are placed into a narrow file or vial, the first to enter emerges last. Anyway, I told you about what they say about that. Whenever Rebekah passed a high place during her pregnancy, Esau struggled to get out. To get out.
To get to the high place?
Whenever she passed a house of prayer, Jacob struggled to get out. Jacob addressed Esau in the womb. Remember I told you that there were supposedly two of the archangels, Samael, who was the chief of Lucifer, and Michael, who was the chief of God. They were always interceding here. Jacob allegedly told Esau in the womb, quote, "The world of the flesh is not the world of the spirit. Here is eating and drinking, marriage and giving in marriage, and procreation. There, in the kingdom of heaven, none of these are found. Let us divide the worlds between us. Take which you prefer." And Esau hastily chose the world of the flesh. Well, it's interesting that Christ quoted this when he was talking about, so it was in the days of Noah. In the days of the coming man, so it was in the days of Noah, that men shall be marrying and giving in marriage and eating, and then whap.
Also sounds like Abraham the law.
Right. Esau so cruelly tore Rebekah's womb that she was unable to conceive children again afterwards. Yeah. Jacob was allegedly born circumcised. Listen, listen.
It helps a little bit.
So. Now, wait a minute, though. How could that be?
Esau probably did it to him.
Yeah! Esau bit it off. It's good.
Very good.
There were 12 other saints born circumcised, according to tradition. Adam, Seth, Enoch, Noah, Shem, Terah, Joseph, Moses, Samuel, David, Isaiah, and Jeremiah were born circumcised. Now, we'll see here that it says that Isaac circumcised Esau at the age of 8 days, but later he subjected himself to a painful operation to restore the foreskin.
You mean Esau did?
Hmm? That's what I said, isn't it? Now, at the first, the difference between Jacob and Esau was no more than between a myrtle shoot and a shoot of a thorn. In other words, there was no visible difference between the two. Afterward, Jacob piously studied Torah. Esau began to frequent the high places and do acts of violence. Before the age of 20, he had committed murder, rape, robbery, and sodomy. God therefore blinded Isaac, which preserved him from his neighbor's silent reproach. Now, again, this is what Christ was speaking of when he said, don't judge the fruit. Don't judge before the time. The good tree will bear good fruit, and the evil tree will bear evil. The reason I know this is because there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of references to that same story that Christ used. And they're all talking about the fruit of Jacob or Israel versus the fruit of the flesh or Edom or Esau. And so when Christ was using that, you remember all the times that let's go look at it. Matthew 12. I sometimes assume that people know more than what I shouldn't assume they know more about. Verse 33. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and its fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by its fruit. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Now, generation of vipers, that's another bad translation. It says, "You, O son of the snake, how can you, being evil, speak good things?" Again, the Talmud's reference is that Esau was the son of the snake, the son of Lucifer. And the same, this same saying, exactly, is in the Talmud, applied to Esau and Jacob. So Christ's sayings about the good fruit of the tree and the bad fruit, where he was repeating over and over the things that were in the Talmud, except he was now revealing the true meaning of Isaac, the true meaning of Jacob and Esau, that he was the promise. Now again, it's another place too. Let's go to chapter 7. Verse 15. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravening wolves. Ravening wolves is always in the Talmud applied to Esau. The flesh versus the spirit. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Exactly the same as in the Talmud, applied to Jacob and Esau. Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Now again, he's not talking about you being a nice person or smiling. The thing used to bug me to no end. I mean, I was 17 days after I was a believer, I was on television exposing my ignorance. And all these idiots used to call and say, if you're a Christian, you should smile and be nice. And they'd pull that scripture on me. And I knew it sucked, but I didn't know why. But you see the mystery that Christ knew the Talmud. And all the parables, almost every parable in the Bible is in the Talmud. But Christ extends their meaning and makes it clear with precision. He's talking about the natural versus the spirit. So, you know, that's why, again, it says over and over, it says in other places, you know, they say, well, I'm not judging you, brother. I'm just a fruit inspector.
Well, we just said that Esau was the one who attracted men to
him. All right. Yeah, Esau looked like the child of the promise by any natural observation. Men were attracted to him. He was successful beyond comprehension. Jacob was, you know, a plain man. So again, don't let idiots, in the name of God, pull that stuff on you. I wish I'd have known this stuff when I was on television. Anyway, okay. Now, we're going to see another interesting thing. You know that Christ came from the tribe of Judah, right? Judah was one of the 12 sons of this man, Jacob. Well, the problem was, is that Judah screwed his daughter-in-law.
Wasn't she a prostitute?
She acted like a prostitute. Okay. She screwed, and that's where the seed of Christ came through. Judah screwing the daughter-in-law that was acting like a prostitute. But that woman had the same kind of struggle between Perez and Zerah. And we'll see that in Genesis 38, the struggle within the womb. And the one became apparently, Zerah is the word for seed. And that's the one who the promise came through. Again, the descendants of Esau are Amalek, Herod, and you.
Minor question, but it's here, sir. Think about Esau jumping in the womb when they went past the high place, and Esau going to the high places. At this time, the high places were okay.
Okay is a... is a it's like Ezekiel, Moses, Adam, I mean not Adam, Abraham, Enoch, they saw the day of God. And in seeing, in there, they all of their high places were destroyed. I mean, so like, high places are the places of your false worship that are necessary for your survival and have been necessary up to a point. But by revelation, high places are never necessary. Am I communicating? Mm-hmm. So okay is, Again, one way of saying it, the only reason that high places are necessary is because of our disobedience. Now, let's talk some more about some interesting stuff. Remember the last time remember the garment that God made, the garments, plural, that God made for Adam and Eve. Well, as you can imagine, if God made the garment, first of all, it's probably going to last. It's not going to wear out. And so we saw that garment was, according to the Talmud, was that which was taken. Whoever had that garment, man, we're talking control. And so Noah took that garment or those garments on board the ark, and because of that, the animals were. Now, Nimrod ended up with one of the garments. Esau ended up with the other one. And we're going to see down here in a minute, where it says that in verse 32, just go there for a minute. Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die, and what profit shall his birthright do to me?" The Talmud says that the reason he was at the point to die, other than that, is that he was being chased all over the world by Nimrod. Nimrod wanted the other garment. He didn't want any. And Nimrod's pretty old. Nimrod's getting old now.
This is why Esau was a cunning hunter.
Yeah. Because he had the garment.
Interesting that this bad translation says that when he was born, he was covered. He looked like a hairy garment.
Yeah, but I know. But that it doesn't say that. I mean, I don't know how they got that. So, again, we have this attempt to bring the power of God to the flesh. And apparently successful for periods of time, but eventually it falls to nothing. We're going to study Nimrod more here. I mean, this Nimrod and Esau more here in a minute, but... let's go to read. Let's read the readings here. I'm sorry this is so disorganized, but I'm not really into this man. I'm too tired. Shut up, man. Go to Malachi 1:1. Malachi is the last book of the Old Testament. Through 2:17, we're going to read two chapters. This is the prophets for this reading of what we just read. The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. You know what Malachi means? Angel of God. Messenger of God. I have loved you, saith the Lord, yet you say, wherein hast thou loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord? Yet I loved Jacob, and I hated Esau, and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness. Now, whereas Edom saith, Edom is the fruit of Esau. Whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished. Hear this. We are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. You get the hit pin. Every time you get in trouble... We are bad, and at that point, when Edom could be slain, as long as there's any strength left, is we're going to return and we're going to fix it all up again. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. This one's kind of funny. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. You got to pay attention when it says, thus saith the Lord of hosts. I mean, that's sort of... The Lord of hosts, the word host is the word Sabaoth. And it means...
Big guy.
Hmm?
Big guy.
It means everything. I mean, there's nothing that isn't a host or part of a host. So there's nothing, when it says Lord of hosts, it also means, you remember we talked about that, you know, if you went out at night alone, there's 180,000 demons because Lilith is coming around, and, well, but there's 800,000... You know, other unseen beings. But there's no being that isn't part of this Lord of hosts. There's no power that isn't part of the Lord of hosts. Okay? So when it says, thus saith the Lord of hosts, you got to pay attention. They shall build who? Edom, the flesh, you. You get in trouble, it's desolate, but I'm going to build it up. I'm going to do it. And you're admired for doing it. But I will throw down, and they shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. Smile, God loves you. God only doesn't love you, he hates your fucking guts. When the Lord has indignation, he's serious. I mean, you think it's bad when I have indignation. That's why the whole plan of salvation, the whole function of God stuff, is that you would pick, you first of all, you'd be baptized in crossing the Red Sea. You would leave the world, which is typified by Egypt. Where all of this is going on in your mind. We don't have any, no more flesh and blood stuff. You would wander in the wilderness until you're shed of the grave clothes of the world. And you wander some more until you're shed of the high places of religion. And then when you're free and become as a little child with no preconceptions, then you enter the promise, which is there all the time. But Edom, every time he gets in trouble, what does Edom do? I'm going to go back. I'm going to fix it. With God's help, I'm going to fix it. And your eyes shall see, and ye shall say, the Lord will be magnified from the border of Israel. A son honoreth his father, and a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests that despise my name, and you say, wherein have we despised thy name? You offer polluted bread upon mine altar. And you say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that you say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. What's the table of the Lord? Where does the Lord eat? We just got through studying this. There's only one table of the Lord, and that's the altar. And there's only one altar, and that's the, and it's always in front of you. And it's where you present your body the living sacrifice. And when you, after presenting your body, say, a living sacrifice, you say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
You say, oh, I don't like this. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. Things should be different. You are saying to the Lord that his table is contemptible. The contrast at the start of this chapter is between what? Jacob and Esau, flesh and spirit. And we see, you're coming down and we see what happens. First, Edom, Esau says, it's desolate, but I'm going to fix it. And then he comes down and he says, but they're twins. I'm going to give myself to the Lord. I offer myself a living sacrifice, but it's contemptible. And you, if you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? Now listen, this is going to get heavy. And you offer, if you offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts? Now, what are you offering when you present your body a living sacrifice?
Death.
Think again. What are you offering? You're offering Christ. You're giving, I mean, you're offering the perfect sacrifice. Because it's Christ in you, the hope of glory. So when you present yourself the perfect sacrifice, you know it. Listen to what it says. Romans 12:2. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercy... Well, let's read it. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. Is there any one of you that think you're holy? That think you're acceptable unto God? Then how can he say that? If you present your body, the living sacrifice, and it's holy and it's acceptable unto God, and it's reasonable service, as I've told you before, reasonable is the Greek word logizomai, which means the highest that reason can attain to. And service is the word latro, which means it's a technical term that's used only for the Holy of Holies service, the high priest in the Holy of Holies. If you present your body the living sacrifice, God says it's the highest that reason can attain to, it's acceptable unto him, and it's holy. But if you do what Malachi said, you then, instead of doing that and seeing that in your mind, you say, oh no, I need to change first, or I need to change something about me. You know, I need to, who knows what, ad nauseum. You are saying to God that the sacrifice is contemptible.
Is that because we think the sacrifice is the vessel rather than what it contains?
Amen. And be not conformed to this world. Now, the word world there, which is the word aeon, A-I-O-N, which means there's no English translation for it. The best is the German word, Zeitgeist. And Zeitgeist is all systems, moral, political, economic, social, physical. You're not to be conformed to any of those systems, whether they're good or bad, moral or immoral. I mean, there's no such thing as being a Christian. You know, I'm an American Christian. You can't be. You can't even be a woman Christian or a man Christian. Because you're not conformed to anything of this world. But be ye transformed. The word transforms that we've studied so often means to be transfigured, as Christ was in the Mount of Transfiguration. That is your singular and only goal in life, is to be transfigured. And when law has been, when every arena of law has been tested in you, when the antagonism of the world has brought to holiness that innocence of the seed within you, then the transfiguration process is automatic. But you must see that your only function is to present yourself the living sacrifice. Nothing else. Then it says that you be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. And how is your mind renewed, as we've just got through seeing? By casting down the high places. And the test that comes against it. Well, I need to do this. Anything but faith. You may prove, and the word prove means to test. You may prove or test what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God which is in you, the seed of Christ. You're testing it by the passage of time. And its test and only basis is that you always by knowledge know that that offering is perfect and it's acceptable. The moment you take your eyes off him and onto yourself, then, back to Malachi, you're doing what he said. You're offering a blind for the sacrifice, you're offering the lame, you're offering the sick. Is everybody understand that? Okay. Back to Malachi, chapter 1, verse 9. And now I pray you, beseech God that he will be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will he regard your person, saith the Lord of hosts? Who is there even among you that would shut the doors for naught? Neither do you kindle fire on mine altar for naught. Now, that's a technical terms that are called, they're talking about the temple service, and I don't want to feel like explaining them, so if you really want to know, I'll do it later. I have no pleasure in you, saith the Lord of hosts, neither will I accept an offering at your hand. The do again. There's nothing you can do that will meet the offering requirements. There's nothing you can change. There's nothing you can be. The only off, that's all Esau, do. For from the rising of the sun even unto the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. Praise God. And in every place incense shall be offered unto my name. What's the incense? Your thoughts. Why can it be offered in every place unto his name? Because the seed of Christ is shed on all flesh. This one really gets Hal Lindsey guys and fundamentalists. Because they say, how in the world is there going to be an offering in every place? The only place they're going to have an offering is at the... On the temple. So this again, there's always several scriptures that destroy dispensationalists. You know, they gotta. Now we by knowledge see that we are always in the Holy of Holies. We are always in the temple. Wherever we are, wherever our feet touch, is the Holy of Holies, is the New Jerusalem. We never leave it. It's impossible. Because the promise goes to wherever our feet touch. Okay. In every place incense shall be offered unto my name and a pure offering. A pure offering in every place? Right. For my name shall be great among the heathen, saith the Lord of hosts. But you, the natural, have profaned it, in that you say the table of the Lord is polluted, and the fruit thereof, even his meat, is contemptible. And how do you say that? By wanting to change your lot. Sometimes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uncomfortably.
Perfect sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said also. It's also interesting to note that when God says, when the Lord of hosts says, behold, and pay attention, it's also interesting that you also should pay attention when he says also.
It's interesting how often he's right.
Right. Behold, what a weariness is it? Oh, it's so weary to serve God. It's so... I want to see some stuff. There's no power here. Quit changing the subject. And you have snuffed at it. Stuck your nose up. Saith the Lord of hosts, and you brought that which was torn and the lame and the sick. Thus you brought an offering. Do you see how you do that with your mind? Every time you think that the natural, every time you set your mind on the flesh, you're bringing that which was torn, that which was lame, that which was sick. Shall I accept this of your hand, saith the Lord? But cursed be the deceiver which hath in his flock a male, and voweth, and sacrificeth unto the Lord a corrupt thing. Now, you understand what he's saying? He's saying that, okay, you have a flock, and you have something precious, perfect offering in the flock, and you have the other one. It's not. And what they used to do, and in the times when Israel was corrupted, is they literally would take the really snazoo offering, the one without spot or blemish, and he'd sell it to their rich neighbor. And then they'd offer a polluted. Does that sound familiar? You wouldn't do that. For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful. among the heathen. And now, O ye priests, this commandment is for you. If you will not hear, and if you will not lay it to heart, to give glory unto my name, saith the Lord of hosts, I will even send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. Yea, I have cursed them already, because you do not lay it to heart. Behold, I will corrupt your seed. That's as bad as having a cut quick. It's to having corrupt seed. And spread shit upon your faces. You did not. It was a lucky guess if you did. I mean, that's what it says. These wimp translators take the power out of it. God wouldn't say shit. Where, what is it? What is he spreading on your faces? He's spreading the waste product.
Dung.
But he's spreading the stuff. It's you, it's you, it's... No, but he's doing it. You see what he's doing in the Spirit? Your whole thing is that he's putting the stuff that was useful for a time but now has no purpose in your life, and you get back, so then he's gonna mush your face in it. Face in it, that's good.
That's how you have to
break it down. Yes, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
That's right. Yeah. Even the dung of your solemn feasts, and one shall take you away with it. Where's the only place you're going to take away with dung? You're going to go into the dump, into Gehenna, which the New Testament translates as hell. You're just going to go into the dump. And you shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. My covenant was with him of life and peace, and I gave them to him for the fear wherewith he feared me, and was afraid before my name. You remember that night in when we were at Gilmont? For those of you who weren't there, but it was wild stuff going on. But the fear of God went around the room, and it started with Gary, and it just spread to everyone in the room. And I was the last one. I didn't know what was going on. And I ended up, and when it hit me, I just fell on the floor. And that's all I could do. The fear of God is the beginning of love. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Not as the world gives anything. The law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, and did turn many away from iniquity. For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. He is Malachi. But you are departed out of the way. You have caused many to stumble at the law. I'd love to read this one too, Jimmy Swaggart. You have corrupted the covenant of Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore have I also made you contemptible and base before all the people, according as you have not kept my ways, but have been partial in the law. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us? Why do we deal treacherously, every man against his brother, by profaning the covenant of our fathers? Judah hath dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah hath profaned the holiness of the Lord, which he loved, and hath married the daughter of a strange god. The Lord will cut off the man that doeth this, the master and the scholar, out of the tabernacles of Jacob, and him that offereth an offering unto the Lord of hosts. And this have ye done again, covering the altar of the Lord with tears, and weeping, and with crying out, insomuch that he regardeth not the offering any more, or receiveth it with good will at your hand. Yet you say, wherefore? Anybody want to say wherefore? Because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously. Yet is she thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. And did not he... And you understand what he's talking about? There's only one wife of the youth, and it's talked about all the time in the scripture, and that's Israel. And did not he make one? Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and wherefore one, that he might seek a godly seed? Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth.
Was that the first love?
Yeah. For the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that he hateth putting away. For one covereth violence with his garment, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore take heed to your spirit, that you deal not treacherously. You have wearied the Lord with your words. Yet you say, wherein have we wearied him? When you say, everyone that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord. Again, we're talking about the only God, soul, evil, spirit, good. Doesn't matter how much the soul does, it's all evil. Do versus see. See good, do evil. And he delighteth in them, or where is the God of judgment? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and read the rest of it because it's interesting. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple. Well, who's the temple? You.
Does suddenly mean suddenly?
Suddenly. Quick. Even the messenger of the covenant, whom he delight in, behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. But who may abide in the day of his coming? For who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like a fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that you may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. And just as you have told you so often, you are the gold ore, the quartz that contains the gold. He's purging everything but that which is a pure offering, Christ in you, the hope of glory. Because your identity is the gold, you can glory in tribulation. Because your identity is the gold, you can truly walk by faith. Because your identity is the gold, nothing in this world system can touch you. Nothing. Because your identity is the gold, you know that all things in this universe exist for your purpose. That's why the universe was created. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Lord, as in the days of old, as in the former years. And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers. We find a few sorcerers, haven't we? And against the adulterers, and against false swearers. And again, we found out what adultery means, haven't we? Adultery means when you go to anyone and any place other than God for your sustenance. And against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the hireling and his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. This next section is all of your favorite section. For I am the Lord, I change not, therefore ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your father you are gone away from mine ordinance, and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But you said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Now, the reason is God knows that everyone tithes. They're robbing, you're paying the tithe to Baal, not to God. There's not one of you that doesn't tithe. There's not anybody in the universe that doesn't tithe. The best of their first fruits always go to their chief God. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring you all the tithes into the storehouse. Now, where's the storehouse? It's a technical word. It means the place that you're fed. That there may be meat in mine house, and prove or test me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations or peoples shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. Your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord. Yet you say, what have we spoken so much against thee? You have said, it is vain to serve God. None of you ever said that, have you? And what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance, and that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts? Now we call the proud happy. They that work wickedness are set up, yea, that tempt God are even delivered. And then finally, this is God's Shema. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them, as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth himself, is what it says in the text. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall not leave them neither root nor branch. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings. And ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. And ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb, for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Call no man on earth father. That's enough. Next we get to study about how Jacob conned, stole, stealthily outmaneuvered, how Jacob got the birthright. Everybody understand perfectly? Yeah. Any needs or prayer requests?
No, that was neat one. He said that that was the first love, the wife of your youth.
Yeah.
And I'd like that, to return to that.
I want Ed to give us a little.